Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Film Philosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Film Philosophers, the show that gets into the movies that you love and digs a little mentally deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, alongside my co-host, Mr. Chad C. Riley.
Howdy.
Howdy, hey. We got a great show in store for you guys today, and not to mention we have a great show, but we also have some great guests alongside us. For the first time in Film Philosopher history, which hasn't been very long.
Which is...
But still.
Long running.
We actually have a crossover episode today for you, as we have the illustrious Video Game Bang hosts alongside us today, Mr. Corey Vincent.
What's up, pizzas?
And Mr. Aaron Carter.
It's actually Sir.
Sir Aaron Carter. Not to be confused with the singer, Aaron Carter.
You know, I was all excited to be on your show, but then Aaron showed up. I was to understand this is my solo tour.
I thought it was mine.
You know, we told you both that, and we were hoping you guys would get so excited.
Switcheroo.
Exactly. We were like, well, if we pump them up, like big enough to where they get really excited, that maybe they'll just show up and not give us any grief.
Unlike the Film Philosophers, who are friends in real life, I can verify this. Aaron and I hate each other outside of our show. We get together twice a week for an hour at a time, and it's manageable. But outside of that, we pretend we don't know each other.
I concur.
The man concurs.
I was going to say, my whole idea, I apologize. I have not listened to a whole episode of you guys' podcast yet. But for some reason, I imagined when I got asked to do this, I'm thinking low tones, like a...
Like an NPR episode?
Yes, the whole time.
Hello, and this is the Philosopher Show.
I brought my ginger ale for the,
He brought his ginger ale and a turtleneck.
Yeah, I thought we were going to, calm it down. I'm like, the movie was interesting.
You didn't know you were going to get mentally messy today.
No, I didn't. I
tell you what, when you come on the Film Philosophers, you never know what's to come. But you know what? We do have an exciting show in store, as we are going to talk about, as we follow through the last two episodes with intro to heroism and intermediate heroism. We are now on advanced heroism, as we come to the point in our show where we talk about Civil War.
Captain America Civil War. Thank you very much.
We've been excited about this show for the last month or 2 months or 3 months.
And life. All of life.
So we're stoked. These guys are stoked from the Video Game Bang. And so, just to let you know, we are presented by Mingle Media TV, and we are recording live here in sunny Sacramento, California at VGB Studios. You can't really see the sun because there's black curtains, but still, we know it's sunny outside.
Oh, it's sunny outside.
You can check us out and hear previous episodes on Audio Boom, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, now on iTunes, and Google Play Music on your Android phone. Also, like and follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and twitter.com/filmphilosophy101. As we start the top of our show, normally we do get into a couple of bites of movie news. So at the very top of our list, we got Ryan Reynolds makes an appearance in the Deadpool Honest trailer.
Okay, this guy has got to be like the busiest dude in movies right now because of this character.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's made a few other movies in the past year and a half, 2 years, whatever. But, I mean, still relatively young in his marriage, has a new daughter, I believe, or son.
I believe so.
A young child, right? And yet, ever since Deadpool kind of, had that sneak last year after the Super Bowl, then everything has been all Deadpool all the time. He's done so much unique content as this character. It's unbelievable. And he continues the streak.
That could be because he's actually financially invested in this. So the success of it is literally falls on his head.
Yeah, it's very true, because Ryan Reynolds has pretty much been a very big part of pushing this movie to the forefront of getting just public acknowledgement ever since the, as you said, the test footage dropped. And he has just been behind it, pushing it to that edge just to get it to jump finally. So have you seen it, Aaron?
I went and watched it week two.
Week two.
But I've actually watched a lot of his interviews, and he just seemed like he really loves this character. I mean, it could be a whole, like you guys said, the financial part of it, but he really seems like, I've been wanting to do this Deadpool movie for, 10 years or something plus.
Ever, yeah. Even before he was Deadpool in Wolverine
Deadpool.
Origins.
That wasn't Deadpool.
He had wanted to play the character for years, like already.
Yeah.
And he's, I mean, he's the only one that I think, at least, in Hollywood that can pull that type of character off.
Oh,
I
yeah, mean, definitely.
In a meta fashion definitely befitting his Merc with a Mouth, Ryan Reynolds is making an appearance in the Honest Trailer edition of Deadpool, giving Deadpool a few new lines. Deadpool is now available on DVD and Blu-ray today, which is Tuesday, which is tomorrow or yesterday for you if you're listening to this. And also stars Morena Baccarin, Gina Carano, Ed Skrein, and TJ Miller.
It's Gina Carano, first of all.
Let's Carano.
Let's get that one straight.
Carano.
And she is a
Morena
goddess.
Baccarin.
Well, I know that you're a big MMA fan, and so, yeah.
She's probably a goddess.
She's all right.
Next in news, 69th Annual Cannes Film Festival kicks off May 11th through the 22nd. This year, 21 films from 11 different countries will compete for top honors bestowed by its jury. The jury will be headed by Mad Max director George Miller, alongside former Cannes Best Actress winner Kristen Dunst, former Cannes Best Actor winner Mads Mikkelsen, and Donald Sutherland, among other international film voices. Unfortunately, I didn't really get too much of the accolades of Donald Sutherland, but
he's been in a lot of movies.
That he has.
And there's only one you need to know. Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, yeah. See, this isn't Kiefer. This is
not Kirsten.
Well, that's his best product. That's the best thing he's produced.
Oh. Did you say Kirsten Dunst?
Kirsten Dunst from Melancholia.
Well, yeah. There's another A-lister right there, right?
A-lister that hasn't really done much.
1990s.
Well, I mean,
yeah, she's been kind of off the radar.
Ever since Spider-Man, she just kind of, you know, that kind of.
Well, I mean,
she does something every now and again. She did that.
She does a lot of independent
movies. Show. No, she did Fargo.
Oh, she
the
did
TV show.
Yeah, the TV show version. Yeah, they just wrapped up their second season. She was one of the main characters.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
Haven't watched it, but she was in it.
What is? I mean, honestly, what's the criteria to make someone the head judge? Because George Miller, I can see his expertise in filmmaking with Mad Max and all that, but I didn't know Mad Max was kind of in that vein of Cannes Film Festival movies.
Well, Cannes Film Festival will show any kind of movie. They typically,
there's hope for you, Aaron.
They typically award the high class, if you will, or the really thought-provoking, but you can totally take an action movie to the Cannes Film Festival, like any other film festival, and debut it there if you want to. They debuted, I think, Kung Fu Panda, the first one. I think it debuted at a Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
So they really do. It didn't win, I don't think, any awards, but you can debut
it
there.
Yeah. It made a lot of money, so they just kind of screwed
you all
anyway.
Money.
Yeah. I would always want to go to one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Or to Cannes, but I'm always afraid of what I'm going to see there.
That is true. I mean, because like they said,
stuff too.
I love Chad's analogy too. It's like you can wear flip flops and a Hawaiian t-shirt into a 5-star restaurant. I mean, you can. No one's going to stop you, but you're definitely not going to get any free food or any accolades.
That is true. Well, the festival kicks off tomorrow through the 22nd, so be on the lookout for any movie news that comes about on your, you know.
So fly to France, everybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
French Riviera, beautiful.
And finally on our movie list, Nerdist hosted a Captain America marathon at El Capitan Theater in L.A. Sebastian Stan may have slipped who may be the next Captain America. So the marathon being held at the iconic El Capitan Theater kicked things off with Captain America the First Avenger, The Avengers, Age of Ultron, and to close out the night, Chris Hardwick surprised the audience with the Winter Soldier himself, Sebastian Stan, who teased taking up Captain America's mantle. Now, have you guys had a chance to take a look at this video?
I have not.
No.
No.
So what happens is that Sebastian Stan comes out, and everyone's screaming and hooping and hollering, and he asks the crowd right away, he says, do you guys think that I should be Captain America? And everyone went nuts, because most people in there know the comics.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know the comic lineage as far as what's gone on in the history of it, Bucky does...
take over.
Yeah.
Takes the mantle for a little bit, yeah.
So he was telling the crowd about his when he got approached by Marvel and Disney about the role, and he says, I was sitting there in the room with them, and basically they were saying to me that this is what's going to happen. He's going to become the Winter Soldier, and then eventually he's going to become Captain America, and then blah, 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 blah. He began to drone. He just kind of, his words kind of just stumbled out. They weren't even real words. He was just, you know, blah, 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 blah.
How much alcohol was in this man's system at this time?
You know what? This is pretty much towards the end of the night, so more than likely, probably a lot. Possibly.
I'd have to imagine, because
probably possibly.
Usually these actors are extremely good about being tight-lipped and not wanting...
Marvel will kill them.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Disney will kill them.
Oh, yes. Disney. Yeah. Well, yeah, they are the murderers.
So that he was letting all this stuff slip, I'm sure he had a nice conversation.
Oh, yeah, with Kevin Feige.
Which is interesting, because this question comes up every single time there's a movie with him in it. Mm-hmm. And it comes up for him, the writers, the director or directors, Kevin Feige, all of them. Is it time? Because Sebastian Stan, by the way, is signed for 9 films.
Yeah.
Sheesh. And he's done 3? 2?
I think he's done
1?
2.
3. First Avenger, Winter Soldier, Civil War.
That's right. First Avenger, Winter Soldier.
Yeah, he was actually Bucky in the first Avenger.
He was normal in the first one.
Before he was Winter Soldier, right.
Yeah. So, I don't know, because my idea is this. You have two possibilities with this film coming out. And of course, we're going to get into Civil War and everything as far as how that follows through. But you have two possibilities of this ending out with Chris Evans moving out of his contract and moving on to doing other things and someone else taking up the mantle. Your two options are you either make the Winter Soldier Captain America or you make the Falcon Captain America. I think going with the Falcon might be a little bit more of a feasible thing. I think doing the Winter Soldier is kind of too expected. I don't know. What do you guys think?
They won't do that, though.
They won't go with the Falcon?
They won't Falcon it, no.
Why not?
Well, there's plenty of reasons why they won't. But the biggest one I can think of is that actor isn't a lead man.
Oh.
He's. They would have to find another black actor that's a lead man.
So you don't think that Anthony Mackie's a lead character?
Anthony Mackie, he's solidified himself already as sidekick in that universe, the cinematic universe.
You think the path from Clarence from 8 Mile up to Captain America is just too steep a mountain for him?
It's Mount Everest. Yeah, he's. And then they'll probably go with the. It's not a. Mass appeal thing as well.
You're trying to make this a black thing, Aaron.
It sounds like it's a race thing a little bit.
It is. I mean, let's face it.
See, you know, it's interesting though, because I would say similar thoughts for Sebastian Stan. I don't know that he's a lead actor either. It would be interesting. They'd have to surround him with other characters. I think either one of them, they'd have to surround them with other characters to make it work.
They're not leaders.
Well. Either way, though, Sebastian Stan is leaking some kind of stuff, so someone's talking to somebody. But that does lead us into our main segment, talking about today. We have finally come to this point, ladies and gentlemen. We've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks. We've been going on and on about it. It is here. It is today. We are going to be talking about Captain America Civil War. I know that I'm excited. I know that Chad...
I'm excited.
Chad pretty much has been dreaming, sleeping, eating, just been nonstop talking about this film. And now that it's here, we have an opportunity to finally just go on about
it. Pick it apart into tiny little pieces and chew it up and spit it out.
So am I to believe this is a spoiler episode?
This is a spoiler
this
episode.
This is definitely a spoiler episode.
I thought we were going in the Coliseum.
Oh, you know we are. This is definitely going in the Coliseum here. You know what? Just to go real quick, just to say, how many times have you guys seen it yet so far?
Once.
You've seen it once.
Fresh,
Corey?
Though.
Once.
Chad?
Twice.
I've seen it once. You know, we're going to take pretty much what we've heard, or what we've seen the one time, and Chad the twice, and really just go ahead and dive right into this. But you know what? We're excited. 2016's Captain America Civil War stars Chris Evans, Robert Downey Jr., Scarlett Johansson, Sebastian Stan, Anthony Mackie, just a slew of actors.
And a whole bunch of other people.
Seriously.
Alyssa Milano.
Not her.
Not Alyssa Milano. The flash synopsis for this film is political interference in the Avengers activities causes a rift between former allies Captain America and Iron Man. So real quick, if you haven't caught up on where we are in the cinematic saga of Captain America, you should definitely check out our previous episodes, Introductory Heroism and Intermediate Heroism. Or for those who are keeping track of numbers, that is Lesson 8 and Lesson 9.
Yeah, so if you're looking at the subscription reel, 8 and 9 are where we talked about the first two parts of the Captain America movie saga. Now we're into part 3.
God, yes. Is there going to be a test?
You know there will be a test at the end of this one.
Every moment is a test.
So, Captain America Civil War. Right off the bat, I just have to say, this movie is pretty much a clear candidate for a 5-star rating for me.
Wow.
Now, I don't say that much because even in previous films that we've talked about, I've thought about, you know, maybe 4, 4.5 on really great films.
But it's true. You've surprised me a couple times. I'm usually the one that will rate things lower, but there are a few times you've surprised me and you've let me go high and you stay low for some movies.
I just, you know, when it comes to this film, a lot of things come into play. And we were talking right before the show started, we were talking about screenplays and we were talking about things that each of us kind of have an interest in. One of the big things that I look for in a film is story development, story progression,
absolutely,
and how well the film paces. And I thought this one hit every single one of those markers for me. And this is just a brief overview as far as what I saw. So when I say that this film is a 5, it is because for me it hit a lot of those things. It's a good candidate for a 5 because it hit a lot of those things. But let's go ahead and start at the top.
It hit a lot of what things?
It hit a lot of the things that I liked.
Pacing. Can I jump in real quick? Because having seen it twice, the second time that I saw it, the thing that stuck out to me the most, aside from the fact that I was almost falling asleep because it was late at night and I shouldn't have gone in the first place, but the thing that really stood out to me about the story is that they so deliberately crafted this thing. You've got action sequence and then some quiet, quiet but character development, like juicy quiet time, and then more action, and then another quiet moment that develops other characters, and then more action. You know, they really do this kind of almost roller coaster effect with the pacing of the story. It really, really sticks out the second time, I think. I'm sure it sticks out the first time, but the second time it's like, wait a minute, they actually take time in between all the, you know, arguing and the fighting to let these two characters of all people, you know, Black Widow and Black Panther.
Yeah.
Have a couple of sequences very early on before they're ever in like superhero costumes that are really meaningful and do a great they're a great showcase of their personalities and the stakes that they will eventually have in this fight.
Real quick, and this is just for posterity, Aaron, were you Team Cap or Team Iron Man?
Team Captain.
You're Team Captain America.
Team Captain.
Chad, do
you
I even
know
have
I
to
was
ask?
Team Cap.
Corey?
Iron Man.
Sad.
Here's the thing,
Eddie.
Yeah, I know.
Eddie, glaze over.
Here's the thing. I went in with the mindset that, of course, I'm Team Cap. You know, who else would you be? You know, it just seemed like the most obvious
it's a Captain America movie. So why
yeah,
not,
it's
right?
Captain America movie. You go in, you think, okay, Team Cap. But the great thing about this film is that, and me and Chad had this conversation earlier this weekend, is that this film laid out just because if you watch the trailers, you're like, oh, dude. Captain America is so right. You know, Tony Stark is this huge jerk. He's just trying to put his nose in whatever, and he's just whatever. But then you watch the film, and you're like, oh my gosh, this film lays out such a great argument for both sides. It automatically began to counter the mindset and the thought process that I had coming in, like, oh yeah, I'm Team Cap, of course. There's no reason why any of this, or whatever, whatever. But then you go in and you the film opens as far as Tony Stark is talking to these group of kids at MIT, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, students at MIT.
Which was a great scene. You get a lot of information out of that. You find out that there's something going on between him and Pepper Potts.
Or not going on.
Or not going on. But then you have that instantaneous jump to from, you know, just really fast movement, fast, you know, oh, this and that, this is going on. And then you have the moment where he has that interaction with the woman, the mother.
Right out of the comic book, too.
Exactly.
Ripped
because
right out. I loved it.
In the comics, you had the mother of one of the students that was in the school in the comic books. And in this one, you have the mother of a student who was abroad in
doing some Sokovia. Like humanitarian aid in Sokovia, which is the area that got lifted up into the sky and, you know,
in Age of Ultron.
Dropped in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And I thought that with that scene alone, I'm like, man, this is laying a heavy argument, a really solid argument for Iron Man. So nobody hate me, but I ended up finding myself teaming with Team Iron Man.
Traitor.
Throughout the film. Because it made sense for me after the argument. Mind you, I see what both of them fought for, but I just saw the emotional investment in by the character. Not so much the actor, by the character himself in that.
Can I jump ahead of you for just a second, then we'll come back, because we're not ready for this part of the conversation yet. But by the end of the film, I was on Team Black Panther.
That is very
I thought
true.
That Black Panther, his story arc in this film is fascinating. And yes, he lines up with Team Iron Man for the airport battle, which is amazing, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, I thought that in terms of kind of almost that, not even middle ground, but just the I don't really care about your argument. I'm going to do something that's the most right to do. And he actually changes his mind over the course of the film, which many of the other characters don't quite get around to.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts about this whole movie was he wasn't a character. Black Panther wasn't a character that was just, hey, there's two sides fighting. Let me just choose a side real quick. He did have his own his own stuff going on.
Yeah,
it didn't feel like it was just an add-on character.
Definitely
so whenever
not.
you had kind of three perspectives at the end of the movie, when everything was kind of tying up and everything. Like, I mean, you see him kind of following, you know, Iron Man to the, you know, the Russian base or whatever.
Yeah.
But the whole the only thing that I felt kind of opposite was with Spider-Man on there. Because Spider-Man did feel like he was just kind of manipulated into to joining it. And I thought
he's
a teenager,
what?
Yeah. I thought they were going to do the same thing with Black Panther, but I'm very glad that they chose a different route.
So speaking of Team Cap, let's list down, let's see if we can remember who all was all Team Cap.
Okay.
So we had, obviously, Captain America.
Mm-hmm. Check.
You had Little Help.
Ant-Man.
The Winter Soldier.
The Winter Soldier. You had Ant-Man.
You had
Hawkeye.
Scarlet Witch.
Yeah. And then I feel like we're missing Falcon, of course.
Yeah, Falcon.
So we had six team members on Team Cap, a solid team. I mean, with Scarlet Witch, you had a you know, just talking like almost like
what a great exploration of her mindset and her powers.
Yeah,
in this film.
Exactly.
Definitely an evolution from what you saw in Age of Ultron.
Confused with her. A little confused with her.
How so?
Because they kind of kept playing her as she was a teenager that needed to be protected from the world or something, or she needed to be, or the world needed to be protected from her because she just fully is, you know,
she can do whatever she wants, right?
And so
we're not really sure what she does.
I didn't know, is she supposed to be an adult? Is she supposed to be a child? Because I mean, what actual major decisions besides I want to leave? You know, Avengers
right, she's
Tower.
Like under house arrest until Hawkeye comes to
what other decisions
bring her
does
out.
She actually
and
make?
And I think that plays into, as far as that mindset, that could also be the unknown information as far as how long she was in Baron Strucker, Von Strucker's little experimental lab.
Yeah, but you get that in
Age of Ultron. Yeah.
When Hawkeye is talking to her, when it's the battle, it's like, you got to choose now. You walk out that door, you're an Avenger. So she makes that decision. I'm going out there to help people.
Well, and I think that clearly both performers in Age of Ultron, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, those actors are not teenagers.
No.
Yeah, no.
So, yeah, it is a little off-putting. They do treat her like a teenager.
It kind of felt like a small step back. It didn't ruin anything for me, but I just felt like with that character, it felt like a small. I mean, in Age of Ultron, like I said, she walked out there to join the fight. She tells everybody to go. I got this covered to take the most responsibility for the, you know, the epicenter of the battle, like everything. And then in this other one, she's like, "You're grounded."
Yeah, and I think though that's kind of a genius take on it if you really look at it, because you have somebody who has yet to be exposed fully to the world, such as Scarlet Witch, and then you have them pair with somebody who was literally just born months ago. With Vision, and you have both of them. It just they were setting up what is. I mean, it seems like it's just going to be obvious the eventual relationship that's going to be created between Scarlet Witch and Vision.
In the comics, they ultimately get married for a time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just weird.
That was foreshadowed mainly in that part when he shoots War Machine out of the sky.
Yeah,
you know, he missed a shot. And at the end, you're like, how'd you miss that? He said, I was distracted. Like, I didn't know that was possible, but...
Yeah, I think he's a lot more there than she is at this point.
Yeah.
Now, would it say something if they, you know, if Marvel had Spider-Man's license from a while back and they didn't have to worry about kind of, you know, getting them over, if they put Peter Parker in that role where he's more of the teenager that's grounded.
No.
I think though that they did play that role with him as far as when it came to the scene that we'll talk about a little later, where at the end of that scene, you know, Tony Stark almost has like that fatherly mindset at that moment where he's like, no, you're done, you're gonna go home,
and
so that mindset is there.
Yeah,
it's just like you said, had we had Marvel had the license to Spider-Man beforehand, that would have been a little bit more well founded in as far as creating the foundation of, hey, this is our youngin of the group, so to speak.
Right. And I think that the best thing, now that Marvel and Sony are playing together in the same sandbox, the best thing that they could have done for yet another, a third Spider-Man franchise, is to just go ahead and, we'll give you Iron Man, which they pretty much have. He does. It's surprising the level of connection that they give those characters right off the bat. He is kind of a father figure.
Yeah.
Almost immediately.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, a mentor now, at the very least.
Yeah.
I think when they grounded Scarlet Witch, too, it wasn't because she was young and that she needed protection. It was that she was seen as, you know, a terrorist at that point. If she would have went outside, it would have just increased tensions with the general public and the government and, like, hurt Captain America's case.
She spoke to that whenever she was going to leave, and Vision was like, you know, he tried to stop her, and she's like, don't worry, I'll be fine. And he's like, I'm not worried about you.
Yeah.
I'm worried about them.
Everyone
and what
else
they could make her do.
Yeah.
And so...
And Spider-Man can't get plugged into that role, because what's Spider-Man going to do to get heat?
If he was billed before, I mean, think about it. Spider-Man's whole universe is one guy at a freaking newspaper hating on him, putting out slanderous article after slanderous.
I need pictures of Spider-Man.
Exactly. He's a terrorist. Like, they could have played that something early if they owned him. I'm just saying, if that's a giant, you know, what if type of thing.
And mind you, the mindset, I think, to go back to Aaron's point, it wasn't so much as because of the fact of why they were doing it, but more of how they were doing it, how he was, you know, telling her that, no, she needs to stay. No, it was more of like a coddling rather than a, look, this is what's going on from adult to adult. You got to stay here, or if you leave here, you're going to become a criminal kind of deal. Team Iron Man. Let's go and go down the list with Team Iron Man. Obviously, you have Tony Stark, Iron Man. You have Rhodes, War Machine.
Check.
Vision.
You got Vision, which is a huge player in the game, as we were talking about just right now.
Biggest surprise for me, Scarlet Witch. Or Scarlet...
Black Widow.
Black Widow. Johansson. He's throwing me. That's why.
So like Scarlet Widow.
Yeah, Scarlet Widow. Yeah.
And then, of course, we have...
Black Panther. Spider-Man.
And Spider-Man, who is the kind of wild card of the group.
Yeah.
Big hitter for Iron Man. Who would you say was one of the biggest hitters for Iron Man as far as the strongest guys that you saw on the team?
The Vision.
You think the Vision?
Well, of course.
But did you see him do too much?
Well, I mean, they put him up against Captain America's strongest person, which happened to be one of the most powerful beings in the entire Marvel Universe. So, of course, he was going to get handed to him.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like, if you were to let everyone on Team Iron Man fight each other, who would win? The Vision.
Well, yeah, but they really didn't even have him. He didn't do anything. Like, well, I'm
that's
trying
the
to think
thing.
Of the whole
he didn't go beast mode.
And
for
that's
sure.
that's the mindset I'm having. Is that's why I asked the question. Is because, of course, strength wise, Vision tops them all.
Yeah,
as far as just abilities. But then in the actual battle, in the actual midst of the skirmish, so to speak,
who
really laid it down?
Oh, they gave it to Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. Spider-Man.
They gave Spider-Man like half of the fights.
Yeah, he mopped up.
At least half of the fighting time on Team Iron Man.
I thought.
Just to give him a good show, you know, of, see, we can do this character right.
Throughout
in ways
the movie,
that Sony never did.
Throughout the movie, Black Panther, because I can't think of one of those fights where
that's true.
He could say he lost. I mean, even he went hand
to
hand.
Stopped.
With Winter Soldier.
He didn't really. Because when he got electrocuted.
Yeah, he got stopped by Black Widow.
Yeah, she
ultimately.
Kept stunning the
true,
crap
but
out.
He didn't.
But he didn't go down,
yeah,
in
he
other
didn't
words.
Go
he
down.
Didn't. And I have to agree with Corey on that one, because. Yes, Spider-Man did mop up throughout that one scene that we're going to talk about in a second, but Black Panther consistently was persistent in costume and out of costume, because even when he's fighting the Winter Soldier in the that building, and I mean, I don't know, Winter Soldier just turned around for like 2 seconds, and T'Challa's already up on the second floor, like, craziness.
Like,
yeah, I was like, what the heck happened here? Like, how do you do that?
Can we back up? And
yes, please.
Because... I'm finding it hard for me to put Black Panther on Team Iron Man.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I'm like, that man is on his own team.
He's just kind of, I'm team, I want to kill that one guy.
Right.
I don't care
why the rest of you people are here.
Who else did he fight?
So let's go ahead and jump into the Black Panther then. Let's go ahead and jump into that. Black Panther. The intro, first of all, his introduction as far as into the MCU, I thought was so well done. Because one of the biggest complaints that I have, that I hear constantly from people when it comes to Black Panther is, oh, all he is he's just another Tony Stark. He's just another one of these types of privileged individuals who just really find themselves like, oh, I got all this tech and I got all this stuff and I can do whatever I want and blah, blah, blah. I actually heard that the other day at work. Someone told me.
You slapped that person.
Oh, yeah. That's not at all true.
Yeah. Well, and that's
a misinformed individual.
And yes. That's my mindset is I'm like, I don't remember that ever being the case. I thought he was a king.
Do they have tech? Yes. Wakanda is a fictional African country in the Marvel universe, in the comics, and now in the cinematic universe, and they have tech, and they've been isolationist for a number of years, and so nobody quite knows what exactly they can or cannot do. But I think that's where the comparisons end.
I mean, there's so much depth to this character that it's ridiculous. I mean, besides being one of the smartest people in the MCU.
Yeah.
And you, one of the richest.
You were saying that as far as, because we were just talking about Team Cap, Team Iron Man, why do you think Black Panther totally has his own group all on its own? You were going into that a second ago.
Because throughout the movie, it seemed like his whole motivation, I mean, not seemed, his whole motivation literally is to just avenge his father.
Yeah.
And rewind real quick, I didn't like the choice for his father. I mean, if he's supposed to be the Black Panther before him, I don't think I was way out of shape. but anyway, so every fight that you see him in.
Noted. Kevin Feige, if you're listening to this, next time, don't do that.
Yes. Every fight that you see Black Panther in, his main objective is to kill the Winter Soldier.
The Winter Soldier.
It's not because I need to, you know, have these guys sign some papers.
Right.
That's Iron Man's agenda and the people that back him. Black Panther's whole agenda is I'm avenging my father, and then at the end of the whole movie, it's his last type of thing. It's like I'm done with, you know, the vengeance thing. Mm-hmm. But he's not like, I mean, the papers could blow in the wind for all he cares.
Well, and it's interesting because that's kind of, you did briefly see a portion of Wakanda in Age of Ultron that is very different from the version of Wakanda you see in the mid-credit scene at the end of Civil War.
I don't think that was Wakanda.
I think it was supposed to be. Yeah, the shipyards area.
In Age of Ultron, it's actually outside of Wakanda.
Yeah, I think everything is outside of Wakanda.
Oh, you think so? Yeah. I thought that whole marketplace, Hulkbuster.
Oh yeah, no, that's all just that Africa. That's just poor Africa.
I think that's supposed to be somewhere. They had listed a city. What'd you say?
That's just poor Africa.
That's just poor Africa. Yeah, there you go.
Poor Africa. That's poor Africa. Yeah. That's gonna be my new exclamation. Ugh, man, that's just poor Africa.
And now, if that happened to be true, then that would be a huge gripe with me because there, in the whole nation, there should be no part of this enclosed nation that looks that bad.
So outside of the comics,
sure. So
outside of the comic books, what we know of Wakanda comes from the one cartoon that they did on BET.
That
movie starring Eddie Murphy where the Black Panther comes to America to find a wife.
That's definitely not.
That is not coming. No, Coming to America is not about Wakanda.
Yeah, that's not terrible. About the Black Panther.
Neither is Trading Places.
All of that was beside my point, which was it's interesting that for a country like Wakanda that has been isolationist in this film. They essentially want to enter the international conversation leading the conversation, which was really compelling. I mean, you have this this UN summit happening where they are going to sign the Sokovia Accords, which is the document that says basically, hey, all of you superhero vigilante people need to sign this document and be agents of the United Nations instead of operating on your own terms. And Wakanda is wanting to lead the charge because of the damage that was done in Age of Ultron
and the effect
that it had on their nation.
Yeah, not just that, because
sort
also
of like, oh, world, you infringed upon our sovereign territory and our people, and our response is to lead the way toward the best peace that we can make. I think that's a really compelling
and
presence.
Also, since you mentioned that, they make mention in the film as far as They're part of the reason why they're leading the charge is because of the fact of the use of vibranium, which is produced in Wakanda, the use of it in the destruction of Sokovia, that's what Ultron was made of, you know.
Yeah.
So that is a pretty compelling point. To have them lead that charge, I think was a pretty bold yet payoff. It was a great payoff for them ultimately in the end for that film. What were your thoughts, Corey, about the Black Panther as far as his role in not necessarily Team Iron Man, but doing his thing?
I thought they did him so much justice in the movie. I was kind of with Chad when he said I was pretty much Team Panther, you know, through like the third act. Mm-hmm. By the time it came to that point and that giant fight scene, Black Panther and Spider-Man both stole the show for me. I like Iron Man, don't get me wrong, but I felt like they kind of chumped him out in the movie a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I saw, you know, Batman v Superman, who couldn't even come up with a plot strong enough to make these two guys fight each other. So when I came into the movie, I was like, how in the world are they going to create enough heat between all these characters and do them all justice? Mind you, introducing two very big players. And they did an amazing job. And in fact, the two new players got as much as they needed to. Like,
yeah, they did.
It was so good. Those two stole the show.
Yeah.
I like what you brought up, too, about all these characters, because they do actually invest a good amount of time in the earlier part of the film, letting every character have their own twist on why they choose the side that they choose. It's not just, oh, yeah, what he said, or, oh, yeah, what he said. They actually, each of them has their own reason and motivation for siding with whomever, possibly with, you know, some exceptions later on, like Hawkeye.
I was going to say Hawkeye is probably the only one.
Ant-Man, they just kind of like pick up.
Ant-Man is just asleep in a van, and then a wild Ant-Man appears.
Yeah. Those were the only two that I guess I can let slide, because Hawkeye got a full Age of Ultron like story arc.
Yeah,
like,
he did.
More than he probably should have. But and then Ant-Man, he has his own movie, so you're that's fine.
And Corey brings up a good point as far as the two new additions to the team, because that also brings up Spider-Man. Now, Spider-Man, as Corey said, for me, stole the show, just plainly. With him coming in, the way Tom Holland brought in that character to life, bringing it to life, making it tangible for us to finally see Spider-Man in the actual MCU, along with the other characters, was phenomenal. And then the way it played out was just insanely great.
Almost surreal, because we've been wanting this for so long. And then when it finally happens, the only thing that's going to be better is probably when we get the X-Men back, because they've royally screwed that franchise.
And I don't know how they're going to redo that. Like, Marvel would be, to bring the X-Men into this already made, you know, universe that Marvel has built, if they can pull that and the Fantastic Four off, then I would just be like, well, then they just own everything.
I can see owning everything. I can see the X-Men working, but Fantastic Four is kind of a long shot for me, just all realistically.
I think you can, though. I think you just have to, Marvel would have to approach it differently than their other, and they're so good at, look at their Netflix shows are approached differently. They're, you know, they can do it. It's just they wouldn't have to make it your traditional superhero type of movie. It would have to be something different.
And I think the thing I love most about the new Spider-Man is, ironically, the Aunt May.
The hot May?
Good Lord Almighty.
51 years
Marissa
of hotness.
Tomei.
Yep. There's that. Just Marissa Tomei. We're just going to leave it at that.
I'd love to go on about Marissa Tomei. I'm going to start the Marissa Tomei cast.
There you go.
I really do like how they locked in and said, we're going to make Spider-Man young, uneducated about this whole thing, very impressionable, and new. He's been doing it for 6 months. Love that. So it's not like he's this established, like in the comic books, when they come at him for Civil War, he's established. You know who Peter Parker is.
Oh, by far, yeah.
And Chad made a good point the other day. He said that one of the smartest things that Marvel did was cast him young, cast Aunt May young, because then that creates longevity.
Yes.
Oh, this actor could be playing this part for 15 years or more.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, he could.
And not only for his age, but also like some of the stunt work and everything is him. Like he actually
is an acrobat of sorts. His last movie will be the Spider-Verse, and then he'll be done.
Oh.
He'll be playing multiple characters.
Every character. Yeah. Spider-Ham.
Exactly, yeah.
Spider-Ham.
It'll be amazing.
And we mentioned a little bit ago about Black Widow and her role in the film. Now, ironically, as much as a lot of people saw in the film that she was siding with Team Iron Man, the unique thing, though, is that she didn't really side with him fully throughout the whole film. she was technically the on the fence kind of individual.
Definitely. Well, she says early on when Secretary of State Ross, you know, comes up into their facility and says basically, "Hey, you guys, here's this giant 1,000-page document. Don't read it, just sign it." And then they all start discussing whether or not to do just that. Her explanation for what she's thinking is she's just reading the terrain. And I think one of the interesting things, she was my third favorite character in this film after Black Panther and Spider-Man. I thought that what they did with Black Widow was phenomenal because she does that. She reads the terrain in the early part of the argument, if you will, and then during the battle sequence at the airport, she rereads the terrain. She actually has listened. She's familiar now with Captain America, with Steve. They've, you know, been co-building the Avengers for a number of months now. Mm-hmm. Ever since End of Age of Ultron, they do it together. And so he comes in and says, "Hey, guess what, you guys? There's a bigger problem than our argument, and we need to address that bigger problem ASAP." And then they all fight for a while, and then she comes out of the woodwork and helps Cap and Winter Soldier escape that battle so that they can go address what this bigger problem is, because she's reading the terrain just like she said she would. And I think that leaving her flexible perfectly suits her character, mm-hmm. but also gives her a chance to really show her leadership chops rather than just being a member of the team. She's one of the dominant voices in this film,
mm-hmm.
I think. I mean, she's the one that meets T'Challa first,
yeah.
you know, has a whole interaction with him. She goes back and forth, and I think it's really interesting. I think it's a great case for giving her a movie of her own.
That's a...
What do you think,
Aaron? That's a stretch.
That's a
movie of her own. I don't know. I don't know how to see... I don't know if that would draw people in. A Netflix series of her own.
I was going
to
say, I could see a Netflix series as far yeah. as giving it... Because of the fact that they've done Daredevil so well, they've done... Jessica Jones so well,
yeah.
And now Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is finally coming into its own as far as it having a solid storyline right now within the last season and a half, maybe two seasons. I could see it possibly doing the whole flashback kind of deal, you know, her through the training in at the academy or whatever she came from, all the way up into where she actually became an official.
Not a prequel.
Yeah, don't do a prequel.
Well, I'm not saying a prequel fully. I'm saying the flashbacks.
You're not saying a prequel. You're just saying the stuff that happened before she was Black Widow up to the point she became Black Widow.
Exactly.
In a series, though,
and
right?
That's not a prequel. In a series.
Okay, in a series, I'll accept.
Yeah, I mean, you're not looking to really create a whole prequel series. You're looking to create a foundation for the character that you know and love and to see how she is performing now and how it fits with what she's learned in the past now.
I feel like they already showed enough of that in Ultron.
Those nightmare scenes were
kind of tacked on.
So here's what I think.
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson is not a Netflix performer.
True.
No.
She's a movie star.
Yes.
She has actually been the only person successful more than once as a female leading a genre film like this. So the only option for them in giving Black Widow a solo property, if they didn't, you know, do a prequel with a different actress altogether, the only option is to give her a movie.
Hmm.
And well, Kevin Feige...
He said he's committed
to
it,
he's
right?
behind it.
Yeah.
But do you think they're going to have to add a lot of other Avenger characters to make it float? Or do you really think just Black Widow...
Can hold it.
...taking on... Who would she take on?
It would probably have to be...
AIM or something like that, or...
Yeah, it would be espionage focused. I would say MODOK. For sure.
Yeah,
MODOK. MODOK in there for yeah.
Oh, good heavens!
Played by Jack Black.
That's even worse.
That actually makes so much sense, though.
They wouldn't even have to like make his head larger.
Yeah.
Just here, wear this yellow shirt. You're good to go. We had mentioned a little bit ago the airport scene, and of course we were saving that for right now to really just dig into this airport scene. Hands down, has got to be one of the best Marvel fight scenes, if not superhero in general fight scenes that I've seen in a while, in as a whole. Because not just are we talking about the little skirmish that you see with them colliding together in that little part right there, but then you have the break-off between Vision and Scarlet Witch. You have the break-off between Captain America and War Machine and Iron Man, who are going at it at the same time. And then you have Ant-Man, who does the most amazing thing.
Yeah, he does.
That was cool.
So we
he does a few amazing things.
One of the most notable things, among others, Ant-Man turns into Giant Man.
Yes.
He says, I've only done this one other time, and sometimes I pass out whenever I do it. So here we
and
go.
And if I rip myself in half, just keep going.
And if I rip myself in half, keep going. And he pushes his button, and he becomes ginormous. And I was thinking that, I'm like, holy shnikes, this is awesome.
Besides the, you know, after them defeating him, when I really think about the fight now, Ant-Man kind of, he beat up some people in
Oh, yeah.
Fight.
Oh, for sure.
He disabled Iron Man.
He flipped ScarJo.
Yep.
Like, yeah, he took her on toe-to-toe.
He flipped the truck over on top of
War Machine.
Yeah.
That was a great
part.
Like,
oh, I thought that was a water truck.
Yeah, he did some dirt there. He was actually, for somebody that just got the suit bear, apparently, yeah.
They took care of all their properties. When you think about it, nobody left this movie, maybe besides Iron Man, and War Machine, I guess, like, nerfed or in a worse state than they were in before they came in.
But if you look at it, though, like, they all got their moments. Even though War Machine, you know, took the biggest hit.
He became the Goliath,
but there was
from the comics.
Yeah, he's the one. But whenever Giant Man at the time was going to swing the truck or whatever, and he just unleashes on it and rips it to shreds to where it's just like nothing left in his hand. It's like a little, it's a pretty cool moment, seeing that, you know, he's got that power behind him, and he was just like all over the place.
Yeah,
I think the only person that did get kind of, it was probably Iron Man. He really didn't have a...
He got his ass whipped in just about every scene he was in. From the beginning to end of the film, he just was a punching bag.
But I've seen that so many times in just the comic books. Like, it just seems like, yeah, it's always that thing, in my mind at least, where I know Tony Stark is more than just the suit, but the way they portray him all the time is... You're just a guy in a suit.
And Zemo is the villain of the movie, who we haven't even mentioned yet.
No.
But, you know, he's technically the villain, kind of. They really, it's a Captain America movie, right? So he has to be on the side of justice and right. So maybe that could be why they kind of made Iron Man out to be a little weaker. Like, they didn't want to make the villain too likable. Because if he would have came in, blasted an AC/DC tune, and, you know, just capped someone as on entrance, that would have been too cool of a moment, I think, for your bad guy.
Well, and I think, too, you got to keep in mind that a lot of these individuals have been fighting together for a good amount of time. They know each other's tactics. They know each other's moves. Of all of them, the least capable one out of most of them would probably have to be Iron Man, if you think about it. Because you have Scarlet Witch, who has her powers. You have Captain America, who is a bona fide soldier of fortune, practically. I mean, he does his stuff easily.
Yeah, I mean, he was active during World War II for untold missions.
You have Bucky the Winter Soldier, who is a trained assassin. You have Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
I was gonna
Black Widow, right?
Black Widow, who is also another assassin.
Trained assassin
that's been
turned.
Exactly.
Turned
Hawkeye, who's well. I mean, ultimately, you have people who have the ability to do more if they're not physically able to, with their powers they're able to. And I think out of all of them, Iron Man, Tony Stark was kind of at the bottom of the barrel in this one.
Yeah, but Iron Man's had three movies to his name, and how does he overcome adversity?
Jarvis.
Through Jarvis?
Pretty much. Because that's how he does it at the end of the movie, too. When he's getting his tail whipped, he has Friday or whatever analyze the fighting.
Yeah.
He kind of
analyzes
his
fight pattern, give you something to do.
Yeah, he has people kind of do stuff for him. If you want to go back to his movies, part one, he beat an old man.
That is true.
with a bunk prototype suit. Part two was... Whiplash.
What's his name?
Again, you beat an old man.
Mickey Rourke.
With a bunk prototype suit. And then part three, you beat a roided up jock. Well, excuse me, I'll take it back. You didn't beat. Your girlfriend beat the main bad guy.
True.
So where's the fight combat training that he's got?
I was going to say just in his intelligence and his machinery.
Well,
and I didn't feel like we saw that side of him. But they did a good job of putting him in a bad place.
Yeah.
He's having troubles with Pepper. He blew up all his suits.
Like, I don't see alcoholism in
there.
He's
midlife crisis.
That's what I want to see.
They didn't
Now,
do
to
that.
Be fair, he did, with technology, single-handedly take on the Hulk in Age of Ultron.
In what I still think is the best fight scene of all Marvel history.
It was, in comparison to this one,
Is it Trumpet?
No.
For me, okay, at the end of this film, I really had to go about thinking about this as far as, so the Hulkbuster fight scene was incredible. It was just probably the greatest thing that came out of Age of Ultron. If not one of these.
Easily.
Then you have this scene, and I would kind of lean more towards the Hulkbuster scene, but the fact that there's so much going on in this airport battle that it's like, well, yeah, but then you got these guys over here. But then you got Spider-Man over here. But then you got Giant Man over here. You're like, I don't think.
I guess. They're close. They're close.
They are.
And if I had to throw a number three up there, just to throw this out there, Daredevil fight scene in the hallway.
Oh, the hallway. The very first one.
That's a third, yeah.
That's an incredible scene. All for its own reasons itself. But you did mention the antagonist, and yes, we did have two antagonists in this film. You had Crossbones, who had a very brief moment in the beginning.
But important.
Which kind of sets the stage for... It's ultimately the comic book equivalent to the blowing up of the school.
Uh-huh.
This is Crossbones essentially throws up a bomb, or he has a bomb that Scarlet Witch ends up force-fielding around it and causing it...
sets off his own armor as a bomb. He wants to blow up himself and Captain America in retribution for what happened in the Winter Soldier. Yeah.
And then, so that kind of starts off the whole, the inciting
the public
incident.
Outcry that says, hey, these guys have to be held accountable because they leave this giant mess behind all the time, and what do they do to clean it up?
Yeah.
And they killed Wakandans. That's just, you can't do that.
That's just jacked up. But, and then you have, as Corey mentioned, you have Helmut Zemo, which is Baron Zemo from the comics. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was really subdued. It was almost as if you could have got away with doing another Chad. What's the name of that the computer guy from the Winter Soldier? I forget sometimes.
Krang.
The computer guy.
Krang. Yeah, the no, Marvel version of Krang.
Oh,
the Doctor
Zola. Doctor Zola.
They could have honestly done the entire film with Zemo's drive and passion, I guess, with somebody like Dr. Zola.
Here's the thing with Zemo. He's getting set up for a long run.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
These other villains have been, for the most part, minus Loki, most of the other villains have been one-hit wonders. And that's not what they have in mind for Zemo. And I think that's a good thing because in the comics, he's a long-lasting villain. He eventually heads up the Alliance of Evil and a lot of other villains come under his banner. He's not in that place yet, but they do leave him alive in captivity. In Civil War, because they've got other things that they're going to have him do in the future.
I think when we are talking about bad guys, quote unquote, in this movie, it's hard to say because, like great storytellers do, there's no real bad guy. I mean, they're all really good if you look at it from their perspective. Like, he lost his family.
They're compelling characters.
And when you think about it, like... Okay, he did do some bad things, like the
killed a guy, but
that guy was a Hydra agent.
So. blew up a media van in front of a UN, meeting, and killed a bunch of people there,
including the king of Wakanda.
Okay, that was a little despicable. Yeah. But come on, I mean, his motives was there. He was a man. It was a crime of passion.
No, it wasn't.
it was highly premeditated.
Now we're getting years worth of 1940s film noir or something. It was a crime of passion.
That swerve, though.
Now I will say though. He made a very interesting choice in not unleashing. We learn in the film, spoiler, that that other super soldier, Winter Soldier people have been created in the past by the Russian government, and they are also in cryostasis the way that Bucky would be in between brainwashing.
So the natural assumption is
that he's going to unleash all five of them.
Yeah.
I was spot. Hook, line, and sinker. Everybody
at the
table?
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No-brainer. Like, oh, great. So now half the Avengers are incarcerated on the Raft, which is a prison in the ocean, under the ocean, right? The other half, like, you've got Rhodey, who's paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Cap, Bucky, eventually Iron Man, all headed to Siberia. And you learn also Black Panther is, trailing Iron Man. But they're going to head to Siberia and take on all five of these super soldiers who are better than Winter Soldier ever was.
And the archetype of these stories normally go, the two heroes would team back up, Captain America and Iron Man are best buddies again, and they're going to defeat three on four, I guess, if you count, Black Panther.
Which is the mindset that they give you when they come together.
Yeah, they're going to go four on five, and the good guys are going to win. but then Swerve.
Yeah, they did Swerve,
and I loved him for it.
So the spoiler is that what ends up happening is that Zemo ends up shooting all those Winter Soldiers, all those the other five soldiers in the head, and sets up this console with a VCR tape, with a VHS tape, and ultimately has them play it. And as they come in, they're trying to steal real back as far as, why did he kill all these people? Why didn't you just have them loose and just kill everybody? Tony Stark finds a clip from 1991 of the death of his parents. And who ends up being the one who kills his parents?
Emilio Estevez. The Mighty Duck Man, I swear to God.
Terrible.
It's Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier. And so Tony Stark finds that Bucky is the one who ended up just killing his parents, and this becomes an emotional roller coaster for Tony right off the bat. Before they were coming in, like Corey said, they were ready, they were unified, they're like, you know what, let's put aside our differences.
Yeah, they have a truce.
They made a truce for that. You know, they even joke about it. He's like, hey, you know, why don't you put down your gun, blah, blah, blah. He has some funny quip, Tony Stark stuff. And then they come to this point, and you just see in Tony Stark's face just the emotion drain out. Everything that he had invested in, as far as in that truce, washes away instantaneous, and it's like he ends up turning into T'Challa.
Later in that two-on-one battle between Cap, Bucky, and then Iron Man, later on in arguing with Captain, he says, he killed my mom. You know, like, it's not just a theoretical, like, it's extremely emotional, like foundationally emotional for him.
And he knew it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like...
That was the other bad thing, is Cap knew it. And didn't tell Iron Man.
Like, yeah,
that's some Benedict Arnold stuff there.
It really is. And so the way they progress from that scene forward, and mind you, any spoilers here? You know, sorry, whatever. But from that scene forward, from the moment where Tony Stark finds the truth, and he sees what, you know, just you see the agony on his face, the progression from that to Tony's downfall as far as his mindset, everything just goes out the window. Everything that he thought about as far as truce, everything that he thought about as far as friendship, everything that he thought about as far as team is just gone. And it becomes now a drive of passion to destroy Bucky. And like I said earlier, he becomes essentially T'Challa. He becomes the embodiment of revenge, of righting what was wrong. And I think in all the movies that I've seen Robert Downey Jr. do as far as Iron Man, I have to say that this probably is his most compelling and most well-done scene as Iron Man for me. Yes, the first one was great, and you know, I am Iron Man, whatever. But this scene alone, I don't know. Robert Downey Jr. just did it for me in this scene. I think this is what sold me on to be as far as being on Team Iron Man for me. I don't know.
Well, he definitely owned it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you have a character like Iron Man who, quite frankly, any performer could be in that suit.
Mm-hmm.
The suit sells itself as an element within a film. But what you need in the performer is somebody who can exhibit range, especially with what they've done with Tony Stark in the cinematic universe, which is different than what they've done with him in the comics. In the comics, he's more frequently a, you know, alcoholic, womanizing, you know, not too likable guy. In casting Robert Downey Jr. for the first one, everything changed. Now the comics try to mirror the movie version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and not just because he's popular with mainstream audiences, but because it's actually a better version of the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you feel that it was a happy ending?
No.
Okay, so this is what I thought about the ending. And so in talking about the ending, we mean that Iron Man ends up cutting off Bucky's arm, the metal arm.
Right.
the other arm.
The one he already didn't have. Yeah.
Iron Man and Captain America go at it. Iron Man is pretty much put down by Captain America, by Captain America driving his shield into the arc reactor that he has in the center of his chest, immobilizing him. Captain America takes Bucky. They end up leaving.
He leaves his shield.
He leaves his shield, which is very iconic. He leaves it when Tony Stark says, "Hey, that doesn't belong to you," which they make reference to in earlier in the film that it's government property. So,
well, and his father made it.
His father,
Howard
made it.
Stark, made it.
And so, you have them leaving. You have Iron Man still there, in whatever. You find that Captain America ends up breaking out the rest of the team from the raft from the prison, floating prison.
Yeah, how did he do that? We don't.
Who knows?
We don't know.
That's it. You just say Captain America.
T'Challa.
It is T'Challa.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Odom one.
And Captain America leaves a letter, or he has a letter sent to him under
by
the name
Stanley.
Of by Stanley under the name of Tony Stank. And
awesome,
which is great, yeah. And the letter just outlines Captain America's apology of knowing it but not wanting to tell him because of him not knowing if he was ready to hear that information. And he apologizes. He essentially makes some kind of like temporary truce and tells him if he ever needs him that he'll be there for him. And then we'll get into the end credit scene as far as that after that. But I honestly, it wasn't for me, it wasn't a happy ending, but here's the thing, it did give me resolution. I think that's the key thing for it, because it doesn't give you this joyful, oh, everybody's a friend and everybody's a team and whatnot. No, it doesn't give you that, but it does give me resolution as far as, okay, Captain America is still there at the table, willing to shake hands and make amends and do whatever needs
well,
to be
the
done.
Well, the interesting thing they do is they set up this film. You think, okay, the Sokovia Accords, everybody's got differing opinions, and then, oh, everything falls apart because some are going to sign it and some are not. The battle between them when some are signing and some are not is actually pretty jovial and fun, mm-hmm. mostly because of Spider-Man and Ant-Man. I mean, they're just peppered in there frequently to make sure that you understand they're not trying to kill each other. They're trying to stop each other.
Yeah.
And there's a difference there. They fall apart because of Zemo in that climactic scene of the movie. By the end of the movie, the Avengers have been disassembled.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't finish the movie, all of them together. So you've got a really interesting, lucrative ground for telling a good story in that first, what was part one of Infinity War. Now they're talking about changing the names of part one and part two to be something else, perhaps. But
really?
The Avengers are not unified, not all of them.
No.
By the end of this film.
So what's the next one in the line of besides
Doctor Strange?
Our characters. The Civil War characters will.
Black Panther has one after that.
Panther will be the next thing, if anything.
I believe that's
another one. I think Infinity War comes first.
Before Doctor Strange? I mean, before Black Panther?
Before Black Panther.
No, Infinity Wars is the finale.
I'm thinking of when's the next ensemble movie, because Black Panther, they're not going to have
ensemble movie.
Yeah, they're not going to have any more.
You don't think so?
No, they're not going to have any. They'll have cameos, but I don't think they'll be as in depth. Who's going to Wakanda?
If they're picking the story up from now forward, I mean, you're going to have Chris Evans, who's pretty much now Secret Avengers.
Yeah, but he's not living in Wakanda
Rogers right now. I thought at the end of the movie he was.
No, he's holding.
They're hiding out there.
They're hiding. No, he says he has the Winter Soldier there. And they're like, you know, if they find out he's here, they're going to come for him. And of course, what are you going to do? It's Wakanda.
Let them come.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think he's going to just sit there. He's probably going to go around doing his saving innocence type of thing around the world just as a underground hero. Why would he stay in Wakanda?
And of course, that leads us to our two end credit scenes. You have the mid-end credit scene, which is a scene where Bucky is going back under cryogenesis or whatever, freezing, whatever he was doing, telling Captain America that, you know, until they can figure out a way to get rid of all the stuff that's in his head, which is the programming that's been done to him as a sleeper agent, that it's best for him to go under. And he puts him under, and as Captain America's walking to a window, he said, they may come for us, whatever, and that's when T'Challa tells him, let them come.
Now, I was, I don't know if I was just like so amazed by the movie, but I had no clue that was Wakanda.
I think what gave it.
I had no clue whatsoever.
Giant Panther Mountain.
Until I saw T'Challa, because I saw they show the little, you know, extra standees or whatever, scientists doing things.
Sure.
And I was like, what place does he know that still has this technology to do this that can help him? And then I saw T'Challa and I was like, no way. Like, this is a little glimpse into what
Wakanda.
Okay, yep. Nice.
So do you guys want to know the full production schedule?
Sure.
So we're going to go Doctor Strange, then Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok,
Pass.
Black Panther, then Infinity Wars Part 1,
uh-huh.
Ant-Man and Wasp, Captain Marvel, and then Infinity War Part 2.
That's a weird schedule.
Yeah.
Only because Ant-Man and Wasp after Infinity War Part 1?
And like, seems like what, 2 months after.
Like what?
I mean, you're talking 2 months after Infinity War Part 1. That's when Ant-Man and Wasp is scheduled.
They got to be, you know, doing something.
But think about what situation are they in that's more important than Infinity War right now? That, okay, this is going on. You know, the Thanos situation's happening, but we still got, you know, the Wrecking Crew we got to deal with over here.
That's right.
Yeah, like.
All in all, Corey, how many monocles out of five do you give it?
I will not give anything monocles because that is not the way of video game bang. Wow. And I'm going to hold true because this is like a crossover, Flash and Arrow.
Ah, okay. how do you guys rate things?
We bing it or bang it.
We bing it or bang it.
Okay, you bang it or bang it. What do you do?
I'm banging it.
You're banging it?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I've banged it five times with a monocle on.
There you go.
There it is.
Chad.
I banged it and then I forgot about it and then I'm going to go see it again next week with a friend.
There you go. Yeah. Chad, how many monocles do you give it?
I'll give it five.
I shall give it five as well.
Although it's a smaller five than I would have given Winter Soldier, which still is my favorite.
I don't know. This might trump Winter Soldier for me.
So you put Winter Soldier above this
above
movie?
Civil War, yeah.
Wow.
I saw Winter Soldier four times in 5 days, opening weekend.
Wow. That's
yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our special segment that we have here called Fight to the Finish. Yes, it is a new segment that we are introducing to you. We are going to be talking about, real quick, about, you know, the film itself is about two different sides of superheroes who come together and battle against each other for a common cause. They have their cause, the other side has their cause, and they're both just battling it out to see who's right. So we thought about it, and we said, who would other comic book superheroes side with cinematically within this film if they were available? And with their involvement, would it sway the battle or would it leave it still at a stalemate? Because essentially, let's just be honest, the film does leave us on a stalemate as far as whose side was stronger. So
we're going to take characters who are not in this film and ask the question, if they were in this film, who would they side with? And would they be kind of the tipping point for that
could
side?
Could they finish the fight?
Yes. So right at the top of our list, we got someone who's familiar, someone safe, Thor. Who do you think Thor would side with, and do you think he would sway the battle? Any thoughts?
Okay, first of all, Thor would be even further on his own team than Black Panther.
Yeah.
However, if I had to choose a side, I would say Captain America's side. Because Thor's just that personality that, like, I don't want to do what other people tell me. I know better.
Authority for Thor?
He's not going to register.
Yeah, no.
Sure.
He's definitely not. And he would sway the battle.
Do you think he would sway the battle?
Yeah.
That's the question because Thor is essentially like Vision. He's got a moral compass that's more primed to staying on the side of, you know what, if this battle doesn't need my input, then let it be.
But he also has that I love a good fight.
That is true.
So I mean,
I think he'd have a lot of fun.
Yeah,
he would treat it like a wrestling match.
Exactly. Yeah, he'd probably be holding a lot of people down.
I don't know that he would like go all powerful.
Yeah, no.
He would hold himself back just because it's a day at the playground for him.
Putting like his Mjolnir on somebody's chest and then walking away because they can't get out. Yeah, like that probably.
Of course, then Vision could pick it up.
Oh, well, yeah. You know. See, there you go.
Sure. All right, next one on the docket. What about Wolverine?
Snicked.
Definitely Captain America.
You think?
Yeah.
You really think so?
He's Cap all side. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He values his anonymity.
They have a history.
Does not trust authority.
Yeah, the government.
Well, actually, now that I think about it, you know what? Wolverine's Canadian. I don't even think he would have much of a...
Well this is an international...
This is actually, you're right, this is international.
They're going to become agents of the United Nations.
He wouldn't, though. Wolverine.
No, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Okay, so,
kidding me?
So we got another team, Cap.
Yeah.
And do you think
That he would fight against Black Panther just for the heck of it. Adamantium versus...
Vibranium,
just to see what would go on.
Yeah.
He wouldn't sway the fight, though.
No. He wouldn't sway the fight?
No.
What about Deadpool? We had mentioned him earlier, and of course we know his bromance that he has with Spider-Man. Do you think he would continue with that siding on Team Iron Man?
He'd be as far away as he'd be further than Thor.
Yeah, like I think he'd try to kill all of them.
Yeah,
just
whoever pays him the most money.
There you go.
That is true. He's a mercenary.
So he'd be on Team Iron Man.
Team Iron Man.
Yeah. His cap is broke.
And do you think his involvement would sway the battle?
No. He'd be stomped on by Giant Man.
I think
real
that
quick.
He would because he actually would shoot to kill.
Oh,
the rest
no, yeah,
of them are just trying
problem.
To stop each other.
Yeah.
He'd be like, oh, this looks like fun. Blah, blah, blah. You know, like he would he would be inappropriate.
Getting killed by a Zamboni.
Although he might be a reason for them to all unify together to stop
against
him.
Against him, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a new one. We haven't really seen this one. It has been mentioned in the MCU before, but not specifically. It was one of those Easter eggs. What about Moon Knight?
He's street level. He's not going to do nothing.
Moon Knight.
Think of him as the Marvel version of Batman.
Yeah, he's more of the Marvel version of Batman.
But schizophrenic.
I was going to say that, but multiple personalities. He wouldn't sway a fight, though.
Whose side do you think he would be on? That's the question.
It depends on which personality he is at the moment.
Yeah.
It would probably
both.
He would probably be like in his own mind. Like he wouldn't even be at the airport on a side at all. It would all be happening in his mind.
Well, there you go. And last but not least, and I did mention this to Corey earlier, and I thought this was a really good, you know, hero to put in. What about the Sentry?
Sentry, definitely Team Iron Man.
Definitely Team Iron Man.
Because he has a relationship with Tony Stark.
There you go.
He'd sway hands down the fight, yeah.
No, but this is the point I brought up with Eddie.
Yeah.
Whatever side the Sentry goes on, the Void goes on the opposite side. So, for example, if the Sentry saves a cat out of a tree, the Void murders a cat somewhere in the world. So...
Right, it's all that weird karmic balance.
Yeah, there's a yin and yang where he would do some pretty cool stuff. But I think he'd end up, the Void would cancel out anything good he did.
Huh.
Well, those are some thoughts to leave you with. Again, if you have any thoughts or comments, please leave them in our Facebook page. Again, at facebook.com/filmlosophers. A couple little movie bites before we go. Yoga Hosers trailer reveals Kevin Smith's Nazi monster-filled comedy starring Johnny Depp alongside Kevin Smith and Johnny Depp's daughter. That looks
daughters. It's
daughters,
not the same.
They're not. Yeah, they both don't have daughters.
Different daughters. Same movie.
Disney releases Queen of Katwe trailer. Lupita Nyong'o leads inspirational true story. And finally, Assassin's Creed trailer arrives tomorrow,
which is today for you,
on Wednesday, with along the lines of new images and details released yesterday for you, which is Tuesday. Thanks again for listening today on our show. And again, a big shout out to our guests that we have here from VGB Video Game Bang. Corey, where can we find you and where can listeners check you out at?
You can check us out on iTunes. Just search for Video Game Space Bang. You can find us on Twitter at Video Game Bang, facebook.com/Video Game Bang Bang. We are everywhere. So if you go to Android Marketplace, you can find us. Just go to the new music tab. It's really nifty. Anywhere you can find the Filmlosophers, you can find the Video Game Bang. We kind of planned it that way.
There you go. And you, Mr. Aaron Carter, where can people find you at?
At YDAAK for Twitter, and anywhere else you can find the Video Game Bang and Filmlosophers, you can find Aaron Carter.
We're kind of like a big happy family.
Exactly. We are a big happy family. Corey's essentially our fly on the wall. So.
We're happy days. Your Joni loves Chachi.
I don't know about that.
Wow.
One.
Okay, Laverne and Shirley.
Oh,
even worse.
Mork and Mindy?
Yeah, I can take that one. I'll be Mork. You'll be Mindy.
Wow.
What? We're in a civil war.
Civil war.
Again, thanks for listening today. And again, if you want to check out previous episodes, look us up on our Facebook page. Again, at facebook.com/filmlosophers and twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Again, my name is Eddie.
I'm Chad.
Class dismissed.